Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are the actual entire panel.
Woo!
Oh, my God.
We're live.
First up, we got digital strategist Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
I missed you a lot. I'm really I hope that I know I wasn't here last week, but I really hope that your sabbatical was satisfying. You came back with like fortitude and like so many amazing ideas.
It was wonderful, and you're serving a look on our first show together.
Am I?
I mean, look, it's a lot of draping in black, and I realize that to you, it's just simplicity and comfort.
I'm leaning into the wifery of it.
It's wonderful.
It's so great.
We've also got journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hey, Guy, are you British now?
I mean, I should have come back with like a deeply affected pronunciation or saying the word chemist instead of pharmacy.
Exactly.
But mostly I just came back with a lot of opinions about steamed desserts.
This is critical knowledge, though.
Margaret, I got to say, we've gotten some very good stylist work over the winter holidays.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video I posted on the Facebook group today of him clapping while he's opening
gifts? Yes, is he auditioning for a Disney movie?
He might be. I mean, he's a Hollywood boy.
I mean, he's very sweet. Also, you're here. You have to pay LA like real estate prices. Why not monetize your child?
Exactly.
It'll just destroy him before he turns 30.
Sure.
Actually, before he turns 13.
Really. But you're going to go through his trust by 18, so don't worry about it.
Pragmatism.
Exactly.
And always speaking for pragmatism is pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Tongson.
And Virgo. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Guy.
Hi, Rocketeers.
That is extra smoldering for
the
year.
It was extra smoldering because I have been so sotto voce or damaged voce for a while now that I thought I'd bring it now that I'm back in the space.
Yeah.
Last week, there was this significant moment in the podcast when I suggested the possibility that Karen may go full Marianne Faithfull from angelic to gravel voice.
Or a little The Ridge, a little Melissa Etheridge.
Oh, you need to knock out a good album when you're like 55.
Yeah. For sure.
Coming up on this week's show, we'll be discussing Bandersnatch on Netflix. Or Stranger Things 2. Unfortunately, your device does not make it possible for you to choose. So you're going to have to go listen to this on something else. No, we're just talking about Bandersnatch. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest gems. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or event have caught our attention this week. Winner Mitchell Rohrbaugh. Is it possible that you're about something this week?
Oh, I'm really about something.
Would you say that you're all about it?
I'm all about it.
Okay.
I'm all about it. I decided in 2019 I'm going to really try as long as I can before the ADD kicks in to really talk about things I was all about. And then somebody challenged us on Twitter to not talk about the normal stuff. So I'm going to just...
I'm totally feeling that too.
Okay.
I feel the pressure of
that.
The
pressure of that. So I'm just going to fast forward all the horror movies I absorbed over the holidays.
I was going to say that we should say that they assigned you no horror movies.
No horror movies.
Me, no heavy or deep stuff.
Yup. Ugh.
Me, no food stuff.
I think I just can't cop out on jams.
Jams. You luck. That's a cop out anyway. Mine is I went outside and I actually went across the ocean and I went to Paris and I went to the beach. I took my lovely husband to Paris and we went to all these museums because he's never been there before and it changed his life. Completely. I've noticed it since we came back. He just really is feeling himself right now. Like he thinks he's like mid-90s Johnny Depp about to be on an upswing. But we went to the Louis Vuitton Foundation and saw the Basquiat exhibition, which I'm so really, really, I'm getting emotional talking about it. I'm honored that I had the opportunity to check it out because pop art is my favorite next to Impressionism. You know, seeing the work of Basquiat in real life, it just was a smack and a slap in the face, man. Three floors of all of his original work laid out impeccably. You know, I don't really listen to docents. I tried to listen. You know, they have an app that you download and you can walk around and listen to it. But they just really, I don't know if these people just had no access to anybody who absolutely knew Basquiat's motivation, but I just took it in. I normally just take in art myself and kind of go with what I feel. And I stand in front of a piece of art for like 2 to 3 minutes and just, you know, I'm literally sobbing through a museum because, you know, to know what somebody put into this and what it means to us now and what has come before it. There were so many things, and they basically laid it out in the way that it was where he started and where he ended. And so the final room is his last piece. I mean, in the middle, they did his collaboration with Andy Warhol, which was really interesting, and you can just feel the 80s in it. You can just feel the 80s. It feels like you're sitting in a room where it's like Warhol, and it's every single artist he ever encountered, and like the nights he got, you know, effed up with Madonna. I know she doesn't drink or do drugs, but like you just felt the energy and seeing it and getting close to it. It just felt like you were walking in spirit with it. And, you know, they did it in collaboration with Sheil, who's another artist. And I have to make sure I'm saying his name right because I'm just doing off of memory.
Egon Sheil.
And he was another artist that died. He's from the late 1800s, early 1900s, and he died at 27 as well. And he had, you know, they kind of set it up so that when they, you can see the moment where they had a complete culture shock. Mm-hmm. And for Basquiat, it was becoming famous, obviously, and then starting to plunge deeper into his addiction. And for Egon Sheil, it was going to World War One. And just, God, I can't tell you how much I love art. And just to be constantly, you know, in America, look, I know we have museums in Los Angeles, but just to be constantly just overloaded with like, you know, go see this terrible movie with Steve, what's his face, and the puppets, and go, you know, do this. And it's just like, you just want something real and original in a place that does it really fucking well with croissants and perhaps a latte. And it's just Paris, man.
I really like an art museum like in a non-English speaking country.
Yes.
Because like I'm
more respect.
Well, I'm just so likely to like good student the work of going and reading the little things. And of course you can always get something to play in your ear in English. But there's something nice about being like, no, go and look at it. React to it.
Yes.
Like look at it in the context of the things around it. But like don't constantly be trying to learn the thing that they're trying to tell you.
Right.
And just experience it.
Yeah.
Margaret, about what are you this week?
I am about the thing called the Golden Globes. Mm. Not really the whole ceremony because it was a pretty lackluster affair. I mean, it was just very typical, very bubbly, very drunk. There were awards given out that I'm still mulling over, like Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody.
You're questioning the greatness of Green Book?
This, like, taking over the whole thing.
It killed the homosexual community to see that,
yes,
like, happen. Those two awards.
Right, like, A Star is Born. Like, didn't everyone expect that movie to get a little bit
basically
more than,
Matt
like,
and Bowen song. Melted, you know? I mean, it was just like, they were like, what?
I mean, watching Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper sit up there, like, 5 feet from the podium.
Oh, yeah.
And never get to make that walk.
Yeah,
I know.
Except for the Shallow.
Yeah.
Gaga gets to go. She doesn't get to really talk much.
Yeah, she didn't even get to talk much. Like Mark Ronson was just like blah, 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 blah.
Till later.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Can you imagine dyeing your hair to match your dress and not even be able to do anything with it?
I'm going to have to say, too, her outfit was a misfire, though.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, talk to me about that.
Nude lipstick with the lavender hair and the lavender dress. It was just like wrong together. The hair too is just like too newly done. She needed to have that shit sit for a little bit.
Is that Ally post? Why did you do that? Why did you do that?
I like that look better than the lavender.
I think 20 years after Gwyneth Paltrow, she's trying to capture the magic of washing yourself out with pastel.
Exactly.
Whoops. Anyway, the moment that I did really love was Regina King's acceptance speech for many, many reasons. One, because Regina King is one of those actresses that has been constantly the MVP in several movies, always like the best scene stealing, like side actress who's never properly gotten her credence. And I know she's won other awards, you know, NAACP Image Awards and things like that. And those are important, but like the Golden Globes, she won the supporting actress for,
If
Beale Street Could Talk. So getting that for her, I felt like, oh, she's like finally getting to step up a little bit more towards this Oscar that should rightfully be hers.
100%.
And she got up there, and for one thing, she just channels so much like warmth and exuberance, like very naturally, in a way that I think a lot of Hollywood actresses like wish they could and want to do, but she just has it naturally in spades. And she got up there and she delivered this speech that was this wonderful combination of really heartfelt and spontaneous, but also politically aware. So she ended it on a really amazing note, a vow that she promised to take on.
I just want to say that I'm going to use my platform right now to say, in the next 2 years, everything that I produce, I am making a vow, and it's going to be tough, to make sure that everything that I produce that is 50% women. And I just challenge anyone out there who... anyone out there who is in a position of power, not just in our industry, in all industries, I challenge you to challenge yourselves and stand with us in solidarity and do the same. God bless you. Thank you.
So part of the reason I really loved that vow is that she broke off a small piece. Do you know what I mean? Like, she said, this is what I'm going to do for the next 2 years. I'm not going to like try to change the system single-handedly over my entire career. I'm going to see what happens in these next 2 years, which I just feel like is real. Like, I feel like she's going to honestly commit to that. And it's not just lip service like a lot of people say when they get up there and, you know, signal Me Too or Time's Up.
I would like to raise 3 follow-up points. They are as follows. First of all, it really marked a shift in the place of color at the Golden Globes, at the Globes and the Emmys. For such a long time, Alfre Woodard has been walking up there for TV movie awards and, you know, miniseries and stuff like that.
And Cicely Tyson.
Right. And that was where you saw people of color. And, you know, the like 6 or 8 big awards were pretty much consistently going to white people. And this year, having, you know, Regina King win one of the big film awards, having Sandra Oh take home like the biggest acting award on the TV side was exciting. Second point, I, of course, when it comes to award shows, just want to talk about live TV direction.
Oh, yeah.
And the importance of the aware award show director is so real.
Yes.
And having somebody who was like, wait, a woman of color is saying something significant, shut that band down, like, was really wonderful and nice.
Well, it's almost like the moment she said Time's Up, the band was like,
and it's like, compare that to Peter Farrelly like shutting them down because he needed to talk about how important his work on Green Book was. Third point, you're not just pushing
shallow
past
hell.
Talking.
Yeah.
You're not just pushing past talking about Glenn Close's acceptance speech.
I was going to bring that up as my second most favorite moment.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, Lady Gaga, even though I think her outfit was a misfire, I was sad that she didn't win just for her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she was so disappointed. But then Glenn Close's face, when they said her name, was just truly shocked in
it's
a way.
Decades of disappointment. It's decades of runner-up to Meryl Streep. It's decades of, like, you know, being nominated, like, essentially from the 90s onward for Best Actress, or late 80s into the 90s, and then just, like, never taking an Oscar home, but never also getting that Best Actress award for film, I think, like, really anywhere.
The thing is that she... she's so close to being the biggest loser in Oscar history. In 85, Geraldine Page had been nominated 8 times and finally won. This is, I think, Glenn Close's 7th nomination. And I think she thought it was just another Albert Nobbs. This is just one where they do it out of respect. And at some point in time, when I'm very, very old, they respect me. But just the combination of the look of dumbfounded confusion and then the certainty with which she got up there, and me as an audience member knowing that voice is going to fill up this room and refocus things.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to know exactly what she wants to say because she's Glenn motherfucking Close, and I'm pretty sure she went to like a 7 sister school, and like she's worked in television long enough to have a speech ready. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that whole angle that she hit of like talking about her own mother constantly capitulating to her husband, her father, Glenn Close's father. I mean, that really struck a chord and made it personal. And I haven't seen The Wife yet. I'm dying to see it at this point. I didn't realize it was based off of Meg Wolitzer's novel, and I love her.
It is good, but quiet.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
That's very Wappler.
I can get down with that. But she it might be quiet, but I bet you she still rips that scene. Exactly. Rips those scenes up.
Can I just tell you?
That's her thing.
And the thing is when she does finally bring the dial up, it's to 7. But it's the right 7.
Yeah.
You know, it's not 11, it's 7.
Right, and it's the most precise 7 you've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, Winter.
No. I was just going to say really quickly, like, I always judge how good a movie is by how many people are watching it on a plane. And I have to say it was an even split between Crazy Rich Asians and The Wife.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, I think the Oscar race remains pretty wide open still. I mean, because Olivia Colman.
The hosting remains wide open.
Yeah. Olivia Colman's going to be hard to beat, I feel like.
I mean, Olivia Colman, Glenn Close. I mean, you still have Lady Gaga, like, floating out there, though. I think that I think she's out at this point.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the thing I love about the Globes is a person could really, like, have an October surprise for the Oscars and, like, make people be excited about it. And I feel like maybe if Lady Gaga is not out of the mix, I feel like Glenn Close kind of elbowed Emily Blunt into fourth place.
Hell yes.
And
yes.
Said,
yes.
Pay attention.
Yes.
For sure.
For sure.
Most certainly.
Olivia Colman's going to be hard to beat. I'm sorry. I've watched The Favorite 4 times now. Yeah. Olivia Colman's going to be really
Her
hard
performance
to beat.
Is amazing.
It's amazing.
Like, the nuance of depression that she captures is just a beautiful
It's going to be
just
tough. Kiss. And plus, yes. you know, the just Academy kiss. Loves British people.
Yeah,
so, you know, hard to, but I don't trust the HFP anymore, so they can.
Yeah, it's true. We don't
89 waiters and a grandma.
Especially
don't trust
we don't. We don't trust HFPA anymore, especially after this year, and especially after its best picture award.
Yeah, can we just touch on Bohemian Rhapsody for a moment? I mean, was that basically just a win for like Queen being a giant international band?
Yes.
Well, and Rami Malek's win makes sense.
Rami's does, but like the movie itself.
Yes,
that's confusing.
That was like single tear falling down. And Bradley Cooper's eyes, like, but I sang for that.
I know, right? Yeah.
He just lip synced real
good. I oiled
good.
Myself in whiskey and car oil, goddammit.
I sang for that.
No, I mean, the notion of Green Book for best original or for best screenplay. And
what the fuck was that?
Yes, and a best picture for Bohemian Rhapsody, which is like, if you liked it or not, it's a shit show of a movie.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't really understand it.
I think Green Book says the Green Book win says a lot about like what the kind of European fascination is with American race politics.
Yeah.
Which is always slightly off and like exists 100%. In the realm of fantasy. You know?
They pretend like they don't know what's happening, but they know what's happening.
It's the
but
three
they don't
billboards
want to pay attention.
Outside of Ebbing, Missouri 100%. Award again.
Karen Tongson, about what are you?
This will be quick because it's a very easy thing to cover. And it's like a thing I accidentally consumed on Netflix during what we call the holiday interregnum.
Yes.
That period of like peace and tranquility and binging between Christmas and New Year. I accidentally watched Instant Hotel on Netflix. And I was like, what the fuck is this? The premise of this show is entirely absurd. It's an Australian reality competition show where Australian pairs, mostly couples, some mother-daughter, some like, you know, gay couples, whatever, compete to see who has the best, basically, Airbnb. Right? And so
how did Airbnb make this happen? Right?
Well, I mean, and they don't ever name Airbnb, but they're all vacation rentals or the Instant Hotel. And so it's like all these multiple pairs. And at first I was like, how could this concept sustain itself? Because basically these groups all stay at each other's Airbnb and they all rate the stay. And then the hosts get to rate the guests. And then as the tiebreaker, there is the professional hotelier design person. Her name is actually Juliet Ashworth. And she looks very, what's her name? Lisa Vanderpump.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds
and so she's got
it.
Like,
Sounds
you know,
it.
She's got like the Lisa Vanderpump vibe. But,
Sounds it.
You know, like a couple episodes in, you're like, oh shit, I'm so into this. Because, you know, number one, it takes you to places in Australia that you would not otherwise visit or see. And I think that's one of the points. I think it's not just Airbnb who probably has a secret hand in this, but, you know, the Australian Tourism Board. And
come see Darwin.
Come see, yeah. Also, Barossa, the wine region. So you get like, you get all these different Airbnbs and they're like really kind of fussy pairs. And everybody, of course, it's a competition. So they're nitpicking each other's Airbnbs. And it has to accommodate at least 8 guests, right? So that's a lot. Like, it's a big ass Airbnb.
Yeah, that is.
I've had to like book for parties that large before. It's a pain in the ass. Anyway, among my favorite pairs, I won't spoil the outcome because there are a few Rocketeers actually who brought this up on the Facebook page. I think Zachary Kaysen posted about it on our Facebook page. Anyway, one of my favorites is this mulleted guy named Mark. And his wife, they're high school sweethearts. They're in their, I think, late 50s, early 60s. And in wine country in Australia, their Airbnb is a 1950s themed, like, extravagant, U.S. 1950s Americana. God. And it's like you're sleeping in, like, a weird bed. And then everybody's like, and I was like, oh, my God, that's hideous. But then, you know, there's a Marilyn Monroe room.
Oh, come on. No,
but
no,
everybody's
no.
also, like, just so charmed by what they provide. No. Oh, you also, so the criteria for judging is the quality of the home, local attractions, quality of night's sleep, and value for money. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, so there are some of these places where people go, and it's just sort of like they're in some weird suburb of Sydney, which is like 30 miles from CBD, which means Central Business District, not the weed that doesn't make you high. And they're just like, and it's just like, they're like, we're 30 miles from Sydney CBD or whatever. And that's like, anyway, all sorts of wonderful things. Also, another favorite couple, the Fuss Budget Gay Couple, which are basically Waldorf and what's his face?
Statler
from The Muppet Show. Their names are Brent and Leroy. And the whole time, because one of them is an interior designer.
This is like 50% of who Airbnb like rental lords are.
Exactly. Like the kind of like 50, 60-year-old gay man.
Yeah.
And so Brent and Leroy, one of them is an interior designer. Yeah. He's incredibly judgy about every space.
We bring our own pillows. So we're big on feather and down pillows.
These are polyester. It's good to have feather and down.
And thank goodness we did, because just those cheap poly pillows are not luxury.
God. Anyway, all I say is that if you want a frothy experience that will get you into those reality competition vibes without, I don't know, without seeming too nasty, although it is pretty nasty at various points between the teams, watch Instant Hotel. It's an anthropological journey into the Australian mind.
That sounds amazing.
I think that you've got to watch it as soon as you
can.
We're
going to watch it tonight.
Right.
It's so good.
You guys, can you ever forgive me? This week, I am all about Can You Ever Forgive Me?
What? The play?
The Melissa McCarthy.
The movie.
I've been wondering.
It's so good. So it's the story of Lee Israel, a writer who couldn't get work and then ends up paying her bills by forging letters from like sassy, witty authors of the sort she always wanted to be and never managed to be. And it's so good. It was directed by Marielle Heller, who made Diary of a Young Girl. And what she ends up making is something that really feels like a like mainstream buddy movie of the 80s, while being a frumpy lesbian who does not clean the cat poop from underneath her bed, and an aging homeless gay man who is HIV positive.
Wow.
And the thing is that like it's so wonderful and so beautifully late 80s, early 90s. Like the outfits that Richard E. Grant wears are so perfect, and just there's something so objectifying about those two definitions of these people that I gave you, and the movie always understands that they're great. The movie always understands.
Who's our co-star?
Richard E. Grant. Okay. But like the movie always understands that they are heroes, mm-hmm. and like the best part of that is like Richard E. Grant's character, his HIV status doesn't come up until the coda of the movie, and it's just something you would have assumed. Like, I mean, he's living at this time in the circumstances that he is, but that's not what's going on with him in this movie. What's going on with him in this movie is you have two people who society doesn't have space for kind of it, like knifing their way to a little space. It's so good. One of the things she does is her agent won't take her calls, so she calls up, says she's Nora Ephron, gets her on the phone.
Amazing.
And then one of the sort of tags is it tells you that Nora Ephron eventually sued Lee Israel to get her to stop doing it. And you understand, like, Olivia Colman gives us such a beautiful picture of depression in The Favourite. And this movie does such an interesting job of giving you a different look at a different kind of depression, but one that is like just as authentic. This person who... It honestly reminded me of the way that I went through a bad shoplifting run during my post-coming out depression.
Why did I always know that about you?
That was just me trying to get back at a world I was mad at. Mm. The movie has that energy, and it doesn't have a false morality of, oh, she shouldn't have done that. It does have a very real morality. It doesn't say, oh, good for her, she fought back. It does not treat these people as trite. It really forces her to look herself in the face and explore why she wasn't writing hilarious things from her own perspective the way that she could right. Noel Coward or Dorothy Parker. It's so fucking good. And also Melissa McCarthy, after all of the comedy guys trying to slam out with The Majestic or Dan in Real Life and get their Academy Awards.
Welcome to Marwen.
Welcome to Marwen. she gives you this minimalist, brass tacks, beautiful performance. It's so good. And the story sort of like folds in a romantic narrative in a way that in any other movie I would have been like, do we have to have this? But we don't get that when it's a story about a queer person. When it's a queer person, they don't have a sexuality at all. Mm-hmm. And like, I loved the weird and very specific romantic story that it gave you for Lee Israel. I don't know if it was historical or not, but it's fucking good. Marielle Heller does good work. The screenplay was written by Jeff Witte, who wrote the book of Avenue Q and Nicole Holofcener, who we love from a million different things.
I love her.
Oh, yeah.
I love Nicole Holofcener.
So I think everyone here will love it for different reasons, but I particularly think Margaret is going...
Why do you laugh like that? Is it just ultra predictable?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I mean...
And the whole time Guy was talking, I was like, yes, honey. I will be dialing
like
it up.
You in your mind, buying tickets with your mind.
It's
Fandango.
It's about a writer's process. It is fundamentally about a writer's process. And Margaret fucking teaches a writer's process, you know?
It's true.
All right. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back to talk about Bandersnatch after this.
Hey, if you like your podcast to be focused and well-researched and your podcast host to be uncharismatic, unhorny strangers who have no interest in horses, then this is not the podcast for you.
Again, what's your deal? I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Our show's called Baby Geniuses.
And its hosts are horny adult idiots. We discover weird Wikipedia pages every episode.
We discuss institutional misogyny.
We ask each other the dumbest questions, and our listeners won't stop sending us pictures of their butts.
We haven't asked them to stop, but they also aren't stopping.
Join us on Baby Geniuses
every other week on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell-Rorba.
Margaret Wappler.
And Karen Tongson.
And are you fiending for a nostalgia-steep story set in the 1980s that you can watch over and over and over again and never quite finish? Well, guess what? Netflix sees you. They have given us Bandersnatch, a new interactive episode of Black Mirror. Unfortunately, you cannot listen to our discussion of this on the platform you are currently using. Please consider going and downloading this episode to a Nintendo GameCube or
a 2013 Apple MacBook Pro.
A 2013 Apple MacBook Pro.
Or a Commodore will do nicely.
And then you can have all of the interactive fun with our discussion that you like. Here's what Netflix's VP of product, Todd Yellen, described how Bandersnatch came to be.
How about if we did a story about fascinating new technology that's around fascinating new technology? Black Mirror is the perfect show for interactive storytelling.
Is that real?
That can't be fucking real.
That's not real, is it?
First of all, sorry, Guy. Okay. I don't mean to usurp your position.
Please.
But this whole thing seemed like a fucking marketing ploy.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Okay, let me just like open up by saying I was clearly annoyed by this. Who here had issues with how they watched it?
I didn't.
So we tried to watch Bandersnatch during our New Year's weekend in Palm Springs, but the TV, like with a Netflix button,
yeah,
it had a Netflix button, and it's like, sorry, your device is not capable, you know, of doing this. And then we tried to hook it up to AirPlay, and like nobody's device was capable of actually playing it. So I had to wait till this week until I was home, and I guess my TV's new enough to handle it.
Like, I heard Karen tell this story last week, and I was like, ha ha ha, I will be watching on an Apple TV. I will be fine, and I will click around, and I have, like, it knows where my thumb goes. And then I tried to watch it on an Apple TV, and it was like, nope, and I had to watch it on a fucking laptop. What about you, Ops?
Well, I hooked up the laptop to the TV.
Oh, okay.
So it was fine.
My TV is pretty new. Like, I just bought it like 6 months ago, so that's why I could do it. But the TV that looked very new at the other place was not capable.
Winter, give us a synopsis of the premise of Bandersnatch.
We have a very introverted young man who lives with his single father. His mother died tragically. Spoiler. His mother died. You'll know it in the beginning. His mother died tragically in a train accident, and he is obsessed with a book that she left behind called Bandersnatch. And he becomes obsessed with a character in one of the books that his mom left over, Bandersnatch, that was in a Lewis Carroll book, Alice in Wonderland. And he decides to develop a game about the character itself that he submits to a company that is immediately interested and wants him to build out and develop. And that's kind of where the story begins. You start leading him through a journey of whether he's going to develop it with the company or he's going to do it on his own. And then it starts melding into a fever dream, where you don't know if it's real or if it's Memorex or what's happening, but you start making decisions on his behalf, utilizing the Netflix platform to sort of point him in the directions for the outcome in which you choose.
And it's a Bandersnatch. It's a is like a formidable tome. It's a book, right? Like, that is also specifically a choose-your-own-adventure novel.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the other aspect of it.
Who here read choose-your-own-adventure novels? Did any of you play, like, text adventures or anything like that?
I definitely read choose-your-own-adventure novels.
I read choose-your-own-adventure novels. I remember getting one for Christmas and being like, ooh, how's this going to work?
I did it differently, though, you guys. I'd never liked Choose Your Own Adventure growing up. I thought it was basic. I was much more interested in doing it online. So we would do it online and we would use Saved by the Bell episodes and change the scenario.
That's cool. I mean, I'm a little older, so like I just was super analog and wasn't online until college. So like, so in my formative youthful years.
We were
it's
in
like,
AOL chat room, yeah, so at this point I'm like, elderly as well.
I like basically never even had it. Like, I had a Texas Instruments computer when I was growing up. So it was like, here's, you know, a book, and you can turn to page 75 or turn to page 64.
And you just keep your thumb in the old sections so that you can go back and then start over again if you don't like what you picked.
Yeah, totally.
I loved the way that this movie was satisfying and frustrating in all of the ways that a Choose Your Own Adventure novel was, because they never really were thick tomes full of thought. Like, the ones that I was reading were just like,
they're thin.
And they were trashing about it. And there was something interesting about thinking about that, because that was clearly conceiving of it as something that had like been written in the 1970s in psychedelic times. Like, to me, I was just like, it's Jodorowsky's Dune in there, or however you say that man's name.
Yeah.
and so that was an interesting thought of like a deeply conceptual sort of like very thought out choose your own adventure novel. But I loved the way that watching the process really made me become aware of the coercions of narrative.
Yeah.
And my inclinations towards law or chaos. And I think one of the first big decisions that you come to in Bandersnatch is whether you are going to work with the game development company or not. And I sort of thought that this was something that was trying to celebrate the culture of those, like, Wild West game developer sort of studios, because one of the, like, one of the greatest sort of, like, text adventure studios, Infocom, like, it felt like that, and I thought that was what we were going for. So I went for yes. And the fact that essentially I was punished and told that was wrong. Yeah. That's a wrong direction.
Well, the narrative ends, spoiler alert, kind of immediately if you go with the easy route to success, right?
Yes, and I thought that it was such an interesting lesson, and I became more aware of the ways I was directing this dude.
Well, I almost think of that first choice there as like the improv rule of always say
that
yes.
That is not the first choice. The first choice is cereal.
Well, no, I don't mean the first, but like the first real dramatic choice. Yeah. And you're right, it is cereal. and I picked Frosted Flakes.
Me too.
Me too.
Well, that's my preference. Oh, we're all together at a time.
Oh, good. So, but yeah, when I picked accept, like work with the team, I was thinking, well, yes, like it will push the story forward. If you say no, the story just
exactly,
dies.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it subverts your expectation right there, which is when it kind of started to earn my respect, you know, where I was like, okay, I didn't see that coming.
It's around this point that I started to realize not a lot of women are talking. And
there's not a lot of women.
No
period,
women
in the whole thing.
On the, there's the doctor. What's her face?
The doctor. That's pretty much it. And, like the mom is like, come get on the train with me and die. And that's like it.
But as time went on, I kind
that's
of
that's a spoiler.
Whoops, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I kind of fell in love with that more as I thought about the way this was an analysis of the way that like gamification of choices and also disruptive choices, antisocial choices. I'm always going to say, go talk to the doctor. I'm always going to say, talk about your feelings. I'm always going to say, don't destroy the computer. Your stuff is on the computer. And this is a story that was wanting and needing you to go in the direction of this dude being a fucked up libertarian dude. And I really thought about the relationship between this guy analyzing process of decision making and the therapist talking about processing and analyzing your decision making. And like the different way, like the ways that these Gamergate dudes approach these things, like that their response isn't introspection, it's psychedelic drugs and thinking there's something bigger out there. Like I liked that it was pulling me into that world and it was forcing me into that mindset.
I think, though, that there are multiple layers of narrative that, like, it rewards you with. Yeah. I think as so I obsessively, because I'm, you know, a bit OCD, I'm a Virgo, all of those things.
Oh, you're a Virgo.
I could not let it go. I know, I'm basically a serial killer. I could not let any of those choices go. So the minute even that I chose the cereal, you know, I'm like, but I believe that, like, if I choose the other cereal, I want to know what, you know, like, I believe that's going to make a difference. And what really heavy decision-making people who are like me come to learn through interacting with this game is that actually there are some decisions that are completely inconsequential.
Totally.
That do nothing to enhance the story, that do nothing to take you to a different path. They're just simple, inconsequential decisions.
Or just Easter egg references that they get to leave later on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like the cereal does come back when he watches the documentary.
Yes.
And you see like either see the Sugar Snaps commercial or you see the Frosted
Flakes
commercial.
We don't know. None of us selected Sugar Snaps.
But I went back.
But I went back.
I felt like Chidi from The Good Place watching this thing. I was so stressed out.
Did you actually write down your choices, Karen? That would be true Virgo. It's like a spreadsheet.
There was a spreadsheet that I retweeted that was not accurate, so I'm mad about that. No.
I should have been making a map the whole time.
Right?
No, the one thing that I was going to say is that, see, you guys are looking at it from such a much more cerebral space, and I was just being like, what would I do? And let me tell you something that, and I've written about this before, like how watching a movie with someone else, particularly your partner, like what if you're forced to make a decision, like how their decision might like alter how you even think about them.
Yeah.
Every single decision I said, babe, what should we do? He's like, I don't know. Every single one. I don't know. And I was eventually like,
Alan, be decisive.
decisive. He was like, I don't know. Every single fucking, just like that. I don't know. And I was like,
I watched it with David. Did you watch it?
I watched it with Sarah, and she's just, we often had the same decision.
Yeah.
We no, were very much like, she's not, like, oh, she's like, for sure, flush the pills down.
Every
or whatever,
time he
you know?
Said, I don't know, I wanted to punch him into the Bandersnatch.
Well, since we are all laying out the way that our mental health issues affected our gameplay,
yeah.
I was so codependent with the narrative that I kept trying to be, what does it want me to do?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And like when they
or like, what's going to give me the best story? Yeah, right. I got exactly. obsessed with that too.
But like after the mind fuck of should you like should you work with the company? Like when they were getting ready to jump off of the thing, I was like, it wants me. It thinks I want to make the other guy jump, and that will perpetuate the story.
Right.
But it wants to punish me for that, so I will make him jump.
Yes.
And in the end, I think it was all meaningless.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I really enjoyed that the story played so much with the idea of free will and the times that you would make a choice and he would deny your choice.
Yeah.
You know, like when there's that choice between bite nails and pull earlobe when he's in the doctor's office. You can pick either one, and he won't do either one.
Yeah.
Like, he just realizes that he's getting controlled, so he, like, puts his hand back down. Yeah. I thought that was really clever.
Mm-hmm. I also liked the fact that because it was cumbersome and going away from it and coming back was, like, difficult, it forced me to watch it, and the interactivity forced me to watch it in the way that I watch something with subtitles. Like, if I watch something with subtitles, I have to pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. There's something nice about having to pay attention to it.
Right, you couldn't be on your phone scrolling.
Yeah.
I went through every single possible in one night.
I did the same thing.
And
yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you guys, I got really frustrated with it and felt like it was very lackluster, and I felt like Netflix acknowledges that it's in a drought of original content that people really are drawn to. And I felt like the timing of the launch, the way it was set up, the marketing ploy.
You think it's just a gimmick?
I think it was a gimmick.
What about you guys? You think that this is an innovation in the way we tell stories or a gimmick?
Both.
It's both. Yeah. I think it's pretty gimmicky. I think that, like, number one, it must be incredibly frustrating because so many people have had that precise encounter that we talked about a little while ago where they try to watch it, they try to interact with it, and that wasn't possible. That just leaves you out as somebody who's, like, is not up to date with the current technology or doesn't have the
right
platform.
Which I think was purposeful.
I think it's purposeful. I think it's, like, part of the planned obsolescence, kind of structure. But also, I mean, I think that one of the things that it tried to do was to hit these various spots of narrative gratification. And for some people, it's just like, this is the story. For others, it's like there's a paranoid reading to it that leads to another story or to a conspiracy. Like, I think that that's one of the things that is at once sort of predictable, but also kind of fascinating about it, is that it produces these two kinds of interaction and reading. One of them is paranoid. One of them is that there's always going to be something larger than the story that's going to lead me to a different path, that's going to reveal more, that's outside of the frame of the history of this, the storyline. And the other part of it is just like, you know, I'm presented with what I'm presented with, and it's the material reality of it.
The amount of tedium required to properly explore was the thing that bothered me most about Choose Your Own Adventure novels. It was the thing that bothered me about this. What I liked most about it.
But it's even more frustrating because when you have a book in your hands, you can see a physical object that has a finite limitation.
Yeah,
whereas this, it's like you don't even know.
Yeah.
That's the
vaguely
exciting
back
part.
Hallways of it.
That's
vaguely
exciting. That's the one titillating aspect of it. Is that
also,
you don't
I also
know.
Found that kind of disturbing in a certain way.
Yes.
I was like, how fucking deep does this thing go?
But
and
also,
like,
it's so hard for us to watch something where we cannot look down and see how many minutes are left.
Right. Yes. Yes.
I was most soothed by realizing it's a tycoon game. Like, at the moment, it was like you're just waiting for a review that says you got 5 stars.
Yeah.
It was sort of like that, like, renewed my joy because I love a fucking tycoon game or a simulation game in that way. And I did like it as a weird, screwy little indictment of, like, beta male mindsets.
Ooh, me too.
But it was also, like, so unsatisfying by not... it gave you so little of the hero game developer. It like
Colin, you mean?
Yes. Uh-huh. I liked that it was like
this is how they begin.
Right. I liked that it was playing with that and really sort of like mechanizing how these people sort of like take the blood out of questions, decisions, or behaviors. But I also just felt like there was a more like there was a more interesting story somewhere just on the other side of Bandersnatch where a person just made choices.
Well, I mean, I was interested in some people said they just didn't make a choice. They just let the computer default to whatever it was going to be.
Oh.
Which I do think is also interesting.
Oh, my God. That's another thing I didn't do.
I know. Exactly. Like, once I read that somebody did that, I was like, why didn't I think of that? I'm immediately going to do that. And like,
it accidentally happened to me a couple of times and I got mad.
Of course, you, because you're a Virgo. Yeah,
I was like, I didn't choose that. We need to go back and I need to make my choice, even if it was the same choice.
But
to
default from the very beginning, to like never make a choice. And just let the whole
thing
get steered.
Where does that take you?
You can go and Google it. It takes you to a very specific place, which some people are calling like the true story.
Okay.
Which is basically where he gets the bunny out of the dad's safe.
Yeah.
And joins mother on the train and dies.
Oh, see, I did that too, though, but I opted into that. The part that we haven't brought up yet is the directly to the Netflix ploy.
The Netflix part to me was amazing.
There's an integrated Netflix. For those of you who haven't watched it yet, there's a decision where, you know, some explanation has to come up that a protagonist sees on the computer, and they get to choose. You get to choose. You know, is it Netflix or is this weird symbol?
The glyph, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like, and you know, you've got to choose Netflix. And there are multiple options in the Netflix verse.
Did you guys choose Netflix first?
Yes.
This is interesting because I chose the glyph first.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I went back.
I'm angry that it insisted on Netflix not being essentially a canonical choice with real options, that it just made it a little cul-de-sac. Have the courage of your convictions. I think one of the reasons I really loved this was I played a lot of Infocom text adventures when I was like 9 or 10, and like their version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was the first way I experienced The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and sort of having a work of literature, to use that term broadly, no, Douglas Adams is great, but to have a book sort of your first exposure to it be a not a choose your own adventure, but something that is essentially a choose your own adventure journey through what was originally written as a straight narrative was like really fun and interesting. And I think made me love the story so much more by feeling all of the shapes of it and feeling all of the specifics. And I think it's why I liked it, but also it's why I hungered for a better story because I was like, this is such a rich, ripe world. Like I love, like 1984 is the brink of a brave new world of electronic entertainment, and this only gives you the edge of what that feels like.
You could not be more accurate.
All right. You are listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back after this to discuss our jams.
Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone.
And I'm Adam Felber.
Adam, I haven't gotten one thing done today.
Well, let me see your to-do list. Ah, yeah, well, here. Make 30-second promo for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, so at least you're getting that done.
Score!
Except you haven't said what the show is about.
We're like a comedy field guide to life, starring me and you. I give useful advice, and we have real experts to talk about things like how to keep a friend, or what to do when you encounter a bear.
Bully for you, but you haven't said where people can find the show.
Oh. MaximumFun.org or wherever you find your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell Rorba,
Margaret Wappler,
Karen Thompson.
Now, before we get to our jams, last week we asked listeners to call in and sing a commercial jingle that will likely stay with them for the rest of their lives. You guys, we got a ton of responses. Too many to share on the show.
Love it.
But our call-in line in Sacramento was ringing off of the hook. But here's a taste of some of the jingles that have been stuck in your heads.
Hey, Rocketeers and Guy's mom, and welcome back, Guy. And my favorite commercial that has never been able to be one that I've been able to get out of my mind since junior high. Please don't eat all the morsels. Please don't eat them all. Because if you eat all those morsels, your cookies will be bald. Nestle Toll House morsels, so chocolatey and rich. But save some for the cookies. Oh, your cookies look like this. Please don't eat them all.
I forgot about this.
He's Bradley Cooper's understudy for A Star Is Born.
So great. This is Carlos calling from Portland.
Thank you for that beautiful, beautiful,
beautiful rendering.
Hi, everybody. This is Sonia from Taunton, Massachusetts, and I'm calling about the jingles. First of all, the classic.
Everything's a cat song.
I am calling because I just listened to your January 4th episode about the jingle. And, so I have a jingle from when I was growing up in southern New Mexico. It's not for a business. It's actually for a public health campaign that was going on.
But it goes like this.
So much better.
2, 4, and 6 months at this age, it's very wise. 2, 4, and 6 months. Have your children immunized. 2, 4, and 6
True.
Months. That's
true.
What
true.
And
sing it loud in California, girl.
2, 4, and 6 months. We are one community. 2, 4, and 6 months. Give your kids a healthy start. 2, 4, and 6 months. Immunizing's very smart.
It's like trap music.
That's awesome.
2, 4, and 6 months.
I love it.
Take that, anti-vaxxers.
Yes!
That's the show.
Cardi B was going to come and get him. You talking
Migos in the background.
Yes, exactly. Months.
Those were amazing. I wish we could have played everyone's calls, but there were too many.
Can I do mine?
Yes.
2 and 4
Liberty,
and six
liberty,
months.
Liberty, liberty.
Yeah.
Margaret, do you have one you would like to share?
I already did it. 588-2300-EMPIRE.
I also, if you want a car or truck,
go see Cal.
If you want a car or truck,
go see Cal.
If you're walking with a tiger and you got a cowboy hat, a
pussy cow, pussy cow, pussy cow.
What? Where's Pussy Cow?
That's what I thought when I was
4
years
old.
That's exactly why I'm demented right now.
Pussy Cow.
Yeah. Pussy Cow. This has been the last 5 years of your therapy, hasn't
everyone,
it?
Everyone I know thought it was Pussy Cow. It's like, instead of Our Lips Are Sealed by the Go-Go's,
yes, it was Pussy Cow.
Alex the Seal.
Alex the Seal. Exactly.
In the One Day at a Time theme song, I always thought it sounded, they say, so wop on your feet. I never crossed my mind that they were saying hop on your feet.
So whops on your feet.
Yeah, I feel it.
All right. Now for some real music. Actually, I thought that music was pretty great.
It's all real.
But it is time for our jams. Karen Tongson, what is your yam this week?
I have tried to be more proactive about listening to newer music. This still means I'm a year behind. But one of the songs that I love is by the melodic indie artist Mitski, who is one of the most lauded artists of 2018. And it comes from one of the most critically acclaimed albums of 2018, Be a Cowboy. This song is called Nobody. And let me play a little bit for you. Look, she has an amazing voice, obviously. There was a listener, a Pop Rocket listener on Twitter, who responded to my last proclamation about listening to new jams by saying, please don't leave the 80s behind. Please, you know, I want to.
It would never happen to
Karen.
Don't
get hip. But I was like, look.
Exactly.
I was just like, I love music that sounds like the 80s, even if it's not. And Mitski is one of the most clever artists to do that. Her name is Mitski Miyawaki, and she's a Japanese artist born to American Dad and Japanese Mom, and she spent a globe-trotting youth, like traveling through 13 different countries. In fact, the song Nobody that you just listened to now was written, like, I guess, in some holiday-like sadness situation in Malaysia at some point. She won't disclose what her dad's actual job was, CIA. Mm, yes. Who knows? Wow. But in any case, her first few albums were really like a result of her class projects for college at SUNY Purchase.
What an overachiever.
I know, what an overachiever. She's incredibly young. She has that amazing sultry voice, and she also has a knack for melody. Keep your ears open. I know that she just dropped an album in 2018. It's going to probably maybe win a Grammy or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that she's, you know, she's much beloved by the cognoscenti. So listen.
Winner, you got a yam?
Oh, my jam is from Temple.
Hi, my name is Temple. I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas. And I was listening to your Pop Culture Resolutions episode. And I just got to the part about jingles. So I have to give you this rap for an accident attorney from the 2000s, which really made an impression on my childhood and adolescence. I woke up later in the hospital bed with a big old knot on my forehead. Every doctor said that I should have been dead. If you've ever been injured in a wreck, and you really, really, really need a check, call Cook, Attorney Hal Cook, at 1-866-5 for old Cook. But I'm going to remember that.
I love you so much. I hope he's still in. Can you please let us know if he's still in business? Because I imagine he is.
I have some neck pain right now, so yes. I need to go and see this lawyer and
get him on speed dial.
That is a great performance as well.
She breathed through it in the beginning. Did. Like she
took
like,
her breath.
Yeah,
she did.
That was very Allie.
That's key
of
to
her.
Singing or rapping. You gotta take that breath first.
2 p.m. Wednesday, syndicated television, talk shows, court shows, where every ad is either for a home security system or for an attorney. I mean,
or for the clapper.
You can't beat it.
It's so good. Wobbler, you got a yum.
I do, baby. It's Oh by Sleater Kinney from their 2002 album One Beat. I was so excited this week to see that St. Vincent, aka Annie Clark, is producing their new album. And they took these cute little pictures at the soundboard looking all good and ready to roll.
It was lesbianic.
It totally was lesbianic. In fact, my DMs are open for some secret lesbian gossip that if you want to send me or Karen or any of these members of the team, I'm sure we all want to hear it. Anyway, it's coming out in 2019. We don't know when, but that's why I picked an old song that I fucking love. This is Oh.
I was recently at a party with Carrie Bronstein.
How was that?
It was cool. We drank a lot of LaCroix.
That's the most lesbian sentence you've ever uttered.
No, it's not. It's Carrie.
It was in the top 30.
Yes. Top 30,
This week, my yam is from a lady who's been throwing a lot of yams at us recently. she's racking up she's driving up the scoreboard. I don't know how to say it. It's juice from Lizzo. Let's listen to it.
Ooh, that's a jam for 2019.
Jizzam.
It's really good. I feel like we need to start our letter writing campaign to Lizzo to like save her real juice, not the song juice, for April to August. Yeah. So she can take home the Pop Rocket Summer Jam
title.
She's been in contention too for.
She's
so
been in
times.
Contention for a long time. In fact, if she burps for 30 seconds on record, I'm going to give it to her.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Is that you shading cool for the summer?
I'm going to just jump in right now and say she's a top contender already, and I just said it.
Yeah, she's a top contender for Artist of 2019.
It's yours to lose. Yeah. Yeah. So it's yours to lose.
I'm in love with her Instagram feed. Mm. She is fierce as fuck, and that's 27 views.
Yeah.
She's amazing at the social media game.
She's to me almost reminds me of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Are we gonna talk about her?
Yes.
Can we talk about her?
She's forcing us to talk about her.
We cannot.
I just wanted to say one thing, and then it was redirected. She almost reminds me of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and being somebody who frequently like pops off about stuff that you are surprised that they are popping off about, but says something really smart and funny and great, and you're happy. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Brandon, with Margaret Wappler, Winner Mitchell Rohrbaugh, and Karen Tongson. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone who gave us 5-star reviews in iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. This week, we'd like to thank Honey Bunches of Whatever. They said, my feelings of love for this podcast would be best conveyed with an interpretive dance. Since that wouldn't translate in a review, I'm giving Pop Rocket 5 stars. I would give it more if it was possible. Kisses. And The Real Tavi said, I came into this because I've been a Twitter fan of Guy Branum since my friend Scott Thompson, the amazing Scott Thompson. We have to have him on the show.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Started retweeting him into my feed. I read and adored his book and started seeking out more Guy and found this podcast. Actually, I was born an old lady, chronological age notwithstanding, and my pop culture tastes have always been 20 to 30 years out of step. So this show fascinated me. Started opening my eyes to gasp current music and songs that weren't written by Sondheim. But let's be fair, we have a lot that were written by Sondheim.
So true.
Before I knew it, I was adding Anoni and Cardi B to my Spotify playlist. I'm still not pop culture savvy enough to consider myself a full-fledged rocketeer, but I am a happy rocketeer in training.
Ooh.
She only wears the novice's uniform. Mm. They only wear the novice's uniform. And if you want us to hear your feedback or ask a panel for advice, you can call my mom at 530-237-4108. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and get in the discussion.
Or go to Instagram at Pop Rocket Podcast.
We are a production of MaximumFun.org. Our show is edited by Shane and Deloria, who's always fun but never here, and our senior producer, Laura Swisher, who's always here and, well...
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Have you ever been injured in a wreck?
In a wreck, and you really, really, really need a check, Carl Cook.